This week on See, Here's the Thing, he had an enhancement.
A little brain matter taken off.
The word of the day is forehead. Fatigue. When I say warm and steamy and cocoa, I think of you. That's your preferred type of race, Special K. Apparently, the Erie Philharmonic has a vendetta against our marriage.
Exactly.
You're not bald. I don't get it in first, ever.
Anyway, go on.
I volunteer as tribute. This novel is still a cash cow. Don't poo-poo me. I'm riding a good buzz here.
Suck. Oh, Superman's gay. Why?
He is super.
The man in black fled across the desert and the gunslinger followed. And then the podcast host followed the gunslinger. It's episode 63 of See, Here's a Thing, and it's starting right about now. Welcome back to another episode of See, Here's the Thing. I am your host, Kate, and I'm also joined by my healing co-host, Patrick.
Healing. Yes, healing. I am healing.
I didn't say if you're like sitting down, like heal, like a dog command or...
Oh, it's a little bit of both.
It's a little bit of both today. It's a little bit of both. Patrick had some minor surgery today.
Minor surgery. A little something removed off my forehead. A little something.
He had an enhancement.
A little brain matter taken off. I can't afford it.
Your brain does look kind of big.
Yeah. Oh, it's got a big old wad of something on it.
No, Patrick had a little bit of skin removed. Again, that doesn't sound good. And now he's doing fine.
It's my forehead skin. Yeah. Is what it is.
Just taking a precaution. Is the word of the day forehead?
No.
The word of the day is forehead.
Nope. Yep. So, no, I'm healing right now. I am in a little bit of pain. And I'm a little tired.
Is that the word of the day?
No,
tired?
No, but I'm always saying
you're
I'm
always tired.
So.
Could you pick a different word? Trying to expand your vocabulary.
I did not sleep well last night, so I am.
Fatigued. Fatima is a girl's name.
Didn't think you were going there.
Fatigued.
We are at 63.
63, is that it?
That's according to the paper you gave me.
I hope that's right.
We are at 63-ish.
Are we in a time loop?
Time bubble.
This one just keeps repeating over and over again.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hey, Kate, how are you?
I am mellow.
Okay.
Right now. I'm mellow. I'm not exuberant. I'm not tired.
Okay.
Everybody's tired. I don't want to be tired. Sure. I'm mellow. I'm mellow today. I got a new job.
You did get a new job.
And it has it's not been promoted to full-time podcaster yet, unfortunately.
No,
but
that's on its way.
I got a new teaching job.
Yes, and yes. We will discuss this more off the air.
I'm actually going to be at a school in town, which is awesome for me because my commute is now about 8 minutes instead of about 25-30. So it's
very
a good,
exciting.
Good move for me, but it's been a week. It's been a week and a half.
It has been a week.
It's been kind of a stressful week, but it's all good in the end. So let's address the elephant in the room.
Oh, that's not very nice.
We have a guest here today, and listeners, he's nobody new. You've heard of this person before, usually on the police scanner, but on our show, this is his fourth time returning. We actually did a fact check before we started the show. This is his fourth appearance on the show. No one has ever appeared that many times.
For those of you who are avid listeners, you'll know that he was on 10 and 26 and number 39.
Yeah, and we're of course talking about the inimitable Steve Weiser from the Erie Philharmonic.
Hey guys, how's everybody doing?
Oh,
I think I know we're Fatima and Mello today.
Fatigued. And you? What are you?
I'd go with a little bit of exhausted. I'll take tired and take it down the road a little bit. I agree with you. It's been quite a week.
It has been a week.
And it's only 4 days of it.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I'm trying to get you out of this tired hole, and he's pulling you further down the rabbit hole.
I know, right?
I'm tired. Oh, man. I'm exhausted.
Steve, let's talk. Let's talk about how tired we are.
Oh, man, it's just nuts. There's a lot of tiredness.
Oh, heavens to Betsy. Before we talk about...
You know what's tired?
What's tired?
This stuff in the news this week. We don't have a ton.
It's been a little bit of a drier week. It's a tired week. Yeah. Right. But we have plenty to talk about with Steve.
We have tons to talk about.
Because Steve loves the Dark Tower.
Well, oh, man. Besides that, before we get, for those of you who don't know.
I was getting there. Hang on. I had a segue.
Sorry.
Was that a segue?
No.
That was the segue.
Just give me a second. I'll deliver. Don't worry. He loves the Dark Tower. He loves himself some Game of Thrones. And he loves music because he works at the Erie Philharmonic.
That was pretty smooth. Now,
what's he going to say? You said everything for him.
Thank you for listening to episode 30 or 63.
That's me in a nutshell right there.
That's all we wanted you to hear. That's all you got out of it. Steve works at the Erie Philharmonic, and he is back to talk about the new season for the 2017-2018 season.
Definitely.
And also, they're having another race because musicians run around a lot. But they're literally going to run around the city of Erie, so we're going to talk about that.
Definitely.
And all the neat plans they have for the orchestra for this season and beyond.
It's a fun season coming up, and then we have some further plans down the road, but there's some good things this year with a highlight being Bugs Bunny. So we'll get there. Yeah, we'll get there and we'll talk about it.
Waskily Wabbit.
Definitely.
Waskily Wabbit. Yes, we will talk about that in a little bit, but first off, we're going to talk about some podcast news from our little sphere on the internet. This week, Patrick and I got a chance to be on the show, the Gravity Beard Podcast, for their special segment This Week Today with Chris Green, and what an enjoyable time.
We got the how it was going to work, and we both kind of looked at each other and went, what? But it was actually pretty darn cool.
It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. We're very much used to podcasts that are off the cuff.
Right.
Completely improvised, unscripted. This was a little scripted, but it was so thoroughly researched. It was all to do with the happenings of that specific week. So we filmed for the week of August 2nd,
right,
like 4 weeks ago.
Right.
And then we were told it's going to be published that week.
Yeah, so we got like this script of things that he wanted us to say and what we want to talk about. And we both kind of thought, wow, that's really weird. But when we listened to it, it was fantastic.
Yeah, he's a great editor.
Wonderful editor.
Really
he
cool.
made us sound nice. He did a good
job.
He
cut down 3 hours into about 20 minutes. Yeah. It was fantastic.
Wow. Oh, yeah. So that was fun. And then on Facebook, we had a poll. And I was a little nervous because I put the question on a little too late, like maybe 3 days ago. Oh, no. It's one of our most popular polls yet.
It's a great question.
And it is, what is the best breakfast cereal? Steve, what is your favorite breakfast cereal?
Got to go with Lucky Charms.
Ooh, Lucky Charms.
I would throw in a Reese's, sort of the Reese's Crunch.
Oh, yeah.
Like Corn Pops, but with fun. Those are definitely good. But I think I'd go with Lucky Charms.
You and Julie L. Julie L. also said Lucky Charms.
Yeah, I was surprised that only got one vote out of everybody.
Yeah.
But you know what got a lot of votes?
Yeah.
Stephen Pappas' favorite, Golden Grahams.
Golden Grahams.
He said that on episode 62 that was his favorite, and he seems to be right with the poll. Alexa Maxey from You Can Rewind It, Julie Lokahi, and Jess Sakal also said Golden Grahams. In the camp of Cinnamon Toast Crunch, which I feel is the superior cereal.
Right?
TJ Faulkner and Chris Brayton from the More Gooder Than podcast. Other honorable mentions were Frosted Flakes from Jim Griffey. We had Honey Nut Cheerios from Hannah Ostick, who is the podcaster on Film Roast. Cocoa Puffs from Liz Alward. Apple Jacks from Brad Fox. And Raisin Bran from William Kent Lewis. Then we had some write-ins. Like these mentions were so good, I had to actually quote the person. David Mitchell said, I use a layer of Lucky Charms, a layer of Captain Crunch, and a layer of Golden Grahams.
And then a nap after the big, long crash.
And then he runs around the house for 30 minutes and then crashes, yes. Man. Phil Rude from Blazing Caribou and Brokebot Mountain, he says, Grape Nuts and Frosted Mini Wheats. I eat only the healthiest or unhealthiest cereal.
So does he eat the frosted side or the not frosted side?
Good
or
question.
Is it depending on whether he's healthy or not?
Yeah, is it the healthy day or not?
It depends on where it falls in the milk. Like if the sugary side goes down, does that like bring all the sugar to the bottom? Or are you a scraper? Do you scrape the bottom to get the sugar?
Yes.
These are important questions.
You are very Italian today.
I know. And then Eric Garner, minstrel of the podcast, he said, Captain Crunch, this is very sad, Captain Crunch Peanut Butter Crunch, unfortunately, you can't get them in Canada.
Oh, I smell a care package.
I smell a care... Everybody go go podcast bomb Eric's podcast, which is the Know Nothing podcast, and then figure out, tease him for his address, and then send him some of that Captain Crunch peanut butter crunch.
Boxes and boxes.
Or perhaps just a box of Captain Crunch with a jar of peanut butter.
That works too. That works too.
He didn't specify.
All right, Steve, so now that you've heard all the other answers, would you like to change yours? Or did you hear something that, you...
I have to say, I've become a new recent friend of fan of Raisin Bran Crunch. Which has definitely come up on the list. It reminds me of when I was a kid with my parents growing up, they would, you'd sort of have whatever cereal was lucky to have in your house. So maybe eat Cheerios, Honey Nut Cheerios, you kind of go through phases. There's a point where my dad specifically liked cereal that was soggy or mushy or, I don't know, well done. And there was a point where I came out once and there was a bowl of Raisin Bran sitting on the table. And there are days that he would like microwave a cereal. He would pour milk on the bran flakes and then microwave it, which is as bad as you think it is.
Yeah, it sounds awful.
But the worst was I came out to get up in the morning and there was a bowl of Raisin Bran on the table with milk in it and a spoon, like a lonely spoon in a lonely bowl, but nobody eating it. And my dad's outside mowing the lawn.
He's aging it.
And he was like, well, no, I poured it and then I wanted to go mow the lawn and I was going to eat it when I came back inside. That's awful. So the fact that you can have Raisin Bran Crunch and it's crunchy and good is just sort of, I don't know.
Yeah.
That, poetic justice, for sure.
I like that. Because I actually do enjoy Raisin Bran, the crunchiness of Raisin Bran. Right. And once it starts getting soggy, I might as well just throw it out.
No, you eat it quick.
There is sort of a point, though, like to microwaving it. Because, okay, think about oatmeal, which is usually pretty bland. If you microwave, say, like Lucky Charms, you're at least guaranteed to have that sugary content still in an oatmeal type serving.
Yeah, but it's not a warm cereal.
Like, why haven't we discovered a way to make our favorite cereals into oatmeal?
But it's not a...
I don't know the answer to that.
That's a good question.
Guys, $1 million idea.
I don't know.
It's such a Seinfeld idea. No, it's such a Seinfeld idea.
If I'm having oatmeal, like I want something warm with maybe some sugar on it, it's a very different thing. But if I want cereal, I want it to be crunchy. Like I to this day cannot eat light cereal.
But this wouldn't be cereal, Steve. This would be cereal oatmeal.
Oh my God. Do you ever thought of a name for this?
Oatmeal.
Cereal. Oatreal.
All right.
Oatreal. Yes.
Jeez.
And think about it. Think about the ones that would specifically be really good warm. Like Cocoa Puffs.
None of them. None of them. Zero. Thank you.
You don't think dive into a warm steaming bowl of Cocoa Puffs would be
When you say warm and steamy and cocoa, I'm out.
When I say warm and steamy and cocoa, I think of you.
Oh, no.
Wow.
Speaking of words, Mr. Anderson, would you please give us the word of the day?
All right. For those of you who don't know, the word of the day is the word that we will try to get in, slip in, try to
sneak it in.
Sneak it. So see if you can pop it in there without anybody noticing.
Poke it in.
Yep. So the word of the day to be used in any form of the word is the word buzz.
Buzz.
B-U-Z-Z, buzz. Hmm. So it took a little bit of a challenge for this one because we have in-house guests. So buzz. See if you can sneak in buzz.
Oh, I think this will be easy.
I think it will be a little simple, yeah.
And did you tell our guest the updated rules? You can't use it within a minute because it's too obvious.
No, we've had guests on here that you say, okay, the word of the day is buzz. And they go, oh, I got a buzz haircut. No. That's not how that
there
works.
There are rules for disqualification is what he's saying.
We have never disqualified anyone.
Get out.
You know what? You're disqualified.
No, I'm leaving. Goodbye.
No, but it's true. I mean, it definitely needs more time to generate the necessary buzz to keep going.
That doesn't count.
No, that doesn't count.
52 seconds, I think. I counted.
I was counting.
I need to start over. The minute starts 61. Over. Legal use of word of the day.
I'm sorry. We're going to have to buzz you on that one.
Nope. Anyway. So, Steve, let's talk, to just start off the podcast, let's talk about the Erie Phil and what's coming up in 2017. I know the first thing off the bat in August is the Beat Beethoven 5K.
Exactly. So we've been doing this now for 8 years, and when we all sort of started as a new staff 2 years ago, we wondered this race that happened for 6 years previously. And to give everyone the background, Beethoven's Fifth Symphony is right around 32 minutes, which is apparently a good length for a 5K coming from someone that runs like down the hall. So it's the symphony is about 32 minutes, and the runners will race the 5K, and everyone that finishes the race before the orchestra gets done playing gets a free Philharmonic ticket. So it's sort of a fun little event that we've done. Within the last 2 years, though, we've added a live orchestra component. So the orchestra actually sets up and plays a free concert live. And last year we did it with an air horn, where I sort of line up with the conductor, and when he starts the first like four notes of Beethoven's Fifth, the air horn goes and the runners take off. And then as the runners are coming down to the finish line, the orchestra is actually finishing the symphony as the runners are racing down the finish line to actually try to beat the orchestra.
Just to clarify, this is a da-da-da-da.
It is that.
So do you take an air horn and go with the air horn to that rhythm in the conductor's ear?
No, I'm like...
No, can't change a tone.
You could. So he's on the front of Perry Square in sort of the big band shell, and then I'm over closer to where the runners are, and we just kind of look at each other, and we had to like test it to see like what exactly is the delay between, because it's not like, it's not exactly when you push the button. So we had to like practice it a couple times. You have to tell all the runners.
Because it's so important.
Yeah, exactly.
To get it down to the microsecond.
And you're like, you got to tell the runners like this horn, like don't go when you hear the first one. So we tested it, and then we made it work. Last year was the first time we moved it to Perry Square and did it with a live orchestra.
Okay, so last year, how many runners did you have run this?
We had about 185, 190.
And out of the 190 runners, how many beat Beethoven?
Oh, that's a good question.
Should have prepped you before.
To be fair, Beethoven ran.
Well, yeah, that was my other comment. Yeah.
Beethoven actually
ran
the race.
Beethoven actually shows up.
He does. We sort of brought Beethoven back from the dead. He shows up and he runs. And
I think he's still kind of dead.
He looks great.
He's there.
He loves to take selfies.
Yes, he does. Exactly. Yes, he does.
I'd say, I mean, I don't want to say half. I mean, there's a fair amount. I mean, there's some of the first guys come in around like 14 minutes. It's pretty
crazy.
Quick.
That's ridiculous.
It's really fast. And then I know, I think a majority of them maybe come in front of that time limit, like 32 to 35 minutes.
Now, have you in the past had a, what's it called, pacer that will run, that will, like somebody that can run at a 32 minute mark?
That's sort of what Beethoven does. So ideally, Beethoven is there to run it at basically like a 34-minute 5K.
I think it stands to clarify that we're not talking about the lovable dog from the 90s film.
I don't think anybody is confused by that, especially from the bum, 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 bum you did earlier.
Listen, I can think of a few podcasters off the top of my head that may be thinking of the dog.
Okay, all right.
Just a few. Probably Eric Garner or Stephen Pappas.
All right.
One or the
all
other.
All right.
The hand of the pod, the minstrel of the pod. They can fight over that.
Yes.
We actually knighted someone last week, the hand of the pod.
Yes, we did.
Wow.
Yeah.
And he has a friendly rivalry with whom we're calling the minstrel of the pod, who came on our show and sang our theme song for us.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That ups the bar.
Right?
That really does.
Right.
It did. And then Stephen came on and named himself Hand of the Pod. So there's a friendly Game of Thrones-themed rivalry on the show now.
Right. That's right.
Love it.
That's right.
Anyway.
So continue on with the what's going on with the Phil.
So the 5K Beat Beethoven is sort of what starts our season. It's actually a street fair, so it goes from 9 to 12 on August 26th in the morning at Perry Square. We have three food trucks lined up already, which is going to be really good.
Fantastic.
A lot of local vendors. I mean, who doesn't want a pizza food truck at 10 o'clock in the morning?
Heck I do.
Yes.
But yeah, so by the time the 5K
that
is
was
done,
my complaint from last year.
Yeah. And
there was no pizza food truck.
We had ordered the food trucks and things didn't work out last year, so this year we have at least three coming. We have
good.
A lot of vendors in the park. We've actually arranged to have the Playhouse Showstoppers. We'll be performing at about 11:45 or 11:15, and then the McDowell Marching Band is going to make a surprise appearance. Exactly. So
did you happen to say that this is August 26th?
August 26th.
The day of our wedding shower.
Oh,
how
so,
about
no.
them apples? Well, ours is in the afternoon.
Oh, okay.
We can run in the morning. And by we, I mean me.
Yeah, you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, absolutely. I think I can do 32.
You did a 30-something in when we did the one in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I think I could do that.
We ran the Mario Lemieux 6.6K. And you might have been 50 minutes.
Well, that was six.
But that was
that
longer.
That was longer. Right.
That was longer and hillier.
That's a whole extra K.
That's
exactly.
A whole extra K.
A lot of extra Ks. What is that? Special K, if you will, for Patrick.
It was a cereal mashup there.
That's your preferred type of race, Special K.
Pretty true.
Yes, my bumper sticker in my car is 0.0.
Which is not even true, because you did complete the 6.6K.
I did.
Which is roughly 4 miles.
Yeah.
That was a tough 4 miles. Yeah. Anyway,
yeah.
Getting back to the Erie Philharmonic.
Yeah, Erie Phil.
So no, we're looking forward to that day. It's going to be a lot of fun. I love having the idea that a marching band will be able to sort of just pop up and sort of show up out of nowhere, which will be a lot of fun. So
that's
awesome. It'll be good. We have a rain plan this year. Just like last year, we kind of went into it blind without it just was not going to rain that day.
It didn't, though.
And it didn't. It was beautiful. It was a beautiful day. 65. Yeah. It was perfect. So we do have a rain venue set up in the Hammer Mill Center for Gannon. So if we can still do the concert and have the vendors, we can just sort of walk right across the park. And then the race will still happen right from
Perry
Square.
People will run.
Yeah,
people are crazy. Yes.
So then we can at least do the concert and kind of mix two things together. So nice. That's sort of the unofficial start of the season on the 26th. And then the end of September on the 23rd, the season starts and 10 concerts are going to come and go pretty quickly.
10? Is that normal?
So we do 10. We do 5 symphonic and 5 pops concerts. So the symphonic are sort of like your Beethoven, your Brahms, and then the pops, we open actually with Lisa Vroman, who doing a night on Broadway, but she was Phantom over 2,600 times. She was Christine.
Wow.
So really
she wasn't
good.
Phantom. She wasn't the right. first female to play Phantom. But
who was that?
No one yet.
Oh, all right.
Not that I know of.
Not yet.
Well, that's fantastic. So what else, what other concerts can we look forward to?
Oh,
so,
let me tell you what we can't look forward to.
What we can't?
Apparently the Erie Philharmonic has a vendetta against our marriage.
Oh, boy.
That's because true. Not only did they plan their race on our wedding shower, they planned a concert on our wedding.
So we didn't plan it on their dates. They planned it on our dates.
Absolutely.
Happens, exactly. That's okay.
That's all what
right.
happened.
All right.
Yeah.
So what's happening on our wedding date?
That's the 28th, right?
Yeah,
October.
So Chris Brubeck is coming to town. Chris Brubeck is the son of Dave Brubeck.
No,
so it's the Brubeck Brothers.
I am so there.
It's going to be a lot.
I am so there.
You can't. You have an obligation.
I want to see Chris Brubeck.
Too bad. Well, buy
Take
a CD.
Five?
Yep.
So it's a jazz quartet in front of the orchestra, and we play all of those hits with
Steve,
orchestra.
Steve, I'll be there. I'll make it work. Don't worry.
So will I, if you're there.
So it's going to be fun. Symphonic concert the week later, we're doing also Sprague Zarathustra, which if people don't know what it is, it's the opening from 2001 Space Odyssey. Exactly.
That was really. That's all you need to hear. That's the concert.
Exactly.
I mean, really, why do you have to go?
But it's a rare piece to actually get to play live. It needs a bigger orchestra than a normal orchestra. You need more string players, more brass players. So that's sort of it's a fun one to be able to actually get to do live.
Yeah.
And then the basically three highlights from the second half of the season that really fit well here. We're doing one of the classical concerts. We're bringing in a guitarist, Sharon Isbin, who's won multiple Grammys. And we ended up sort of getting her by accident. It's a long story, but she's pretty much the Yo-Yo Ma of guitar. And she's coming here. She's hosting the classical Grammys in New York City, flying to Erie to play a concerto with us. And then going
She plays
back.
Her guitar like a cello?
Close. But then on the Pops concert side, we have an evening. So last year we did Casablanca with live orchestra.
Yes.
This year we're doing Bugs Bunny with live orchestra.
Okay. All right.
So we're doing
Spirit Magic Helmet?
16 cartoons.
You said Bugs Bunny, not Buzz Bunny, right?
Oh.
Ayo! That was pretty obvious, but I had to get it in. I don't get it in first ever. Story of my life.
Anyway, go on.
So they bring in a screen the size of basically a barn and hang it over the orchestra. So it's not like the little screen that hangs out in the hall. It's a full-size movie theater screen orchestra. And we will play 16 original Bugs Bunny cartoons with, so like, What's Opera Doc, the one where he's Leopold the conductor.
Yeah.
Leopold.
Oh, exactly.
Are you going to do that whole thing,
yep,
too?
All
oh,
of
God,
them.
That's wonderful.
So we have 16 cartoons, which is ironic. Like, we've actually found a newspaper ad from the 1950s when you could come to the Warner, and for a dime, you could see 16 cartoons.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
And that's sort of why we did
that.
So that's what we're doing.
And
now,
for a special, you're going to have dime pricing this event.
Now, yeah, right.
I certainly wish.
I will volunteer right now to be the heavy set tenor that sings that high note, holds onto it forever. I will do that. I will do that until the roof falls down on me.
I thought you were going to volunteer for something different. I thought you were going to volunteer to shave your head and be Elmer Fudd.
That's what I heard.
I don't have to shave my head. I can do it.
You're not bald.
Well, I'm pretty close.
You'd like to be. You miss your bald days.
Thank you, yes.
You do. You talk all the time about how you wish you could shave your head again.
I would do it. Yes.
Well, yeah. this may be your moment.
This might be your chance.
No, I want to be the heavy set guy that sings that high note.
It's funny. I really can't wait
now,
for it.
I started with Spirit Magic Helmet. Mm-hmm. That cartoon, you know, I don't even know which one that one is.
Spirit Magic Helmet. Isn't that What's Opera Doc?
Spirit Magic Helmet. And I'll give you a sample.
That might be in What's Opera Doc.
I think
that
it is.
That might be What's Opera Doc.
And then isn't that when he's like on the hilltop as the girl?
Oh, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so some of the
it's
best.
It's Porky Pig.
God,
not
no.
Elmer Fudd. Am I getting my people mixed up?
It's Elmer Fudd.
It's Elmer Fudd.
Right, yeah. But we get to use like some of the for advertisements. One of the things we have is Bugs Bunny in like the woman's costume, like leaning on the back of a horse.
It's
so good. So we're actually doing it twice.
Wow.
Last year we did Casablanca. It sold out 3 weeks before the concert.
Awesome.
So this year we're like, why not do it two times? So Saturday night, Sunday afternoon.
Oh, how wonderful.
So we get to do it twice.
And what are the dates of that again?
February 10 and 11.
Awesome.
That's
I'll
awesome.
Be there for that.
It's really going to be a lot of fun. And then the pop season finale, which is March 24th, it's called Greatest Fantasy Hits.
Yeah, I'm all there for this
and
one.
And it's where we've handpicked probably some of our favorite music of all time with Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter. One of our violinists, Christina Dolance, is actually doing an arrangement of Game of Thrones.
Wow.
Like, we're going to do a world premiere of our own version of the Game of Thrones, three different themes. Like a suite from Game of Thrones.
That's well, I can off the top of my head, obviously, you think of the theme song, which
right.
In a second, Patrick's going to sing his lyrics for you. But I also think about this last season, this season six, at the end of the season, yep. We heard some killer music.
One of those things, I think it's the Lights of the Seven we're doing that.
Oh, I get chills thinking about it.
And we're doing Carmina Burana because it's in Excalibur. So we're going to do the opening of Carmina Burana, O Fortuna.
That's one of my favorite pieces. One of my favorite pieces.
So, and because in Carmina, it the first thing you hear is O Fortuna, and the last thing you hear is O Fortuna.
Mm-hmm.
So we're actually going to begin and end the concert that way. So we're going to open the concert with O Fortuna, do all the music from the movies, and then end. So you get to hear it twice.
So you have the chorus is going to sing as well.
The chorus will be on that. The chorus is on, we're doing stuff from Skyrim. From the video game, so there's
nice.
Voice on that. The neat thing is we're going to actually have somebody play. Like, we're going to bring an Xbox, hook it up to the video camera, and someone is going to play.
I volunteer as tribute.
I get to do it.
Oh.
It's my favorite video game. So we have to try it, and we're gonna I'm sort of practicing now, and we're gonna have a good a scripted path of I'll find a dragon, go in a dungeon, do what we can. But
that's
we're gonna,
so awesome.
We'll have somebody play live while we play the music from Skyrim.
Wow.
Oh, I can't wait.
Oh,
it's
wow.
really going to be a lot of fun.
And then after that, after March, 24th, how do you even follow that?
There's just going to be a whole bunch of audience of guys going, noob, noob.
Dude, don't do that.
Exactly.
Don't equip that weapon.
So, but after that, mercifully, April 7th, the season ends with a world premiere co-commissioned piano concerto from Philip Glass. And Philip Glass will be in Erie.
What?
My
99%.
Gosh.
He's going to be here. So it's with
how old of a gentleman is he now?
He's in his mid-80s.
Yeah,
but it's written for the pianist.
I need to say something really quick.
Philip Glass.
So the guys on the More Gooder Than podcast just compared last week The Illusionist and The Prestige. They battled over which one was better.
And they both came out within half a year of each other.
They were very close together. That was one of their points. But they were saying how the music in both were pretty good, but they gave the edge to The Prestige. But hey. The Illusionist had Philip Glass, and now he's coming to Erie.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we're a group of about 4 to 5 orchestras across the country that co-commissioned Glass to write a piano concerto for Simone Dinerstein. So we're probably going to be the third group to actually give the premiere of it. And Philip sort of comes as a part of the package as long as he's available. So we're still ironing out the schedules, but we can't wait for that.
Wow. That sounds amazing.
So that's April 7th.
When are you going to get John Williams to come to town?
Soon, hopefully. That would be. I think he's coming to Cleveland this year some point. So.
You do realize that if you do happen to book John Williams and you don't invite Kate, that she will never speak to you
if
again.
If he's not on my podcast, I will cry.
Yeah.
Millions
I'll work
of tears.
On
well, she has a photo with him.
I do.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You ever heard I've told you my story.
I'm pretty sure.
Him. Yeah. He was just doing a concert at Avery Fisher Hall, but they had an open rehearsal. So at the intermission of it, all these fans start flocking to the stage. I'm going, if I don't do this now, I'm never going to do
this. This is my chance, right?
And I think I managed to, when I got up to him, say something like, I've loved you since Jurassic Park, as fast as I could say it. I think he called me cute and, patted me on the cheek. And then we took a picture, and that was it.
Nice.
And it's the worst possible angle because he's on the stage. I am below him on the stage. And someone took the picture, under my chin. It's the least flattering photo of me.
But it's awesome.
But it's awesome.
Still John Williams, exactly. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So anyway, your season's amazing.
It's tough to end that.
That's an amazing season.
The only thing after that is April 14th, we have another collaboration with the Playhouse.
Yay!
That's right.
And we're doing Bernstein's Candide.
The music of Candide is just phenomenal.
It should be really good. So it's challenging for the musicians. It's fun. Nothing is better than Make Our Garden Grow.
Yes.
And of course, everybody knows the song Glitter and Be Gay because Kristen Chenoweth made it really, really popular a few years back.
I'm glad you said that to our audience, that everyone knows the song Glitter and Be Gay.
Of course, everybody. Well, I'm sure like if you've ever vaguely heard it, even if you are unaware of what it was, you could recognize it.
Sing a little bit of it for us.
And then it goes really high, and she swings these jewels around.
Well,
family jewels. Candide!
Right.
Here's jazz hands you missed.
No. I saw.
You saw. Well, that makes me very excited to hear everything, to come to the concerts. Where can our listeners go to learn more about all these wonderful events?
So everything's on eriefill.org, eriefill.org, or our Facebook page, just Facebook/eriefillharmonic. Everything is there. It's sort of very well laid out. We maintain all of that. But the website's definitely the place to go for everything. And you can get concert tickets beginning April 18th. Season passes are available now. But it's going to be a fun year. We're sort of, last year, we ended the season with 4 sellouts in a row, which is something the orchestra's never done in 103 years.
Wow.
And we're really looking forward to kind of ramping into this season and keeping it going.
Awesome.
It's fun.
Well, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we are going to sit Steve down because he's been standing the whole time. We're going to...
No chairs in this place.
I know. We haven't gotten
there's
that
two
yet.
Chairs.
That's right. True.
Two chairs. When we come back, we're going to talk to him about the Dark Tower. We're also going to chat about Game of Thrones and Henry Cavill's mustache. When we return.
You ever wonder when Spider-Man goes to the bathroom if the toilet paper sticks to his fingers?
You ever wonder why Superman wears his underwear outside of his pants?
My name is Imran.
My name is Anthony.
He's the jock!
And he's the nerd.
And we're your hosts for the Jock and Nerd Podcast, where we sometimes try to attempt to answer these questions.
This is a full spoiler podcast, and we swear a lot.
Check it out for awesome geek news, interviews, and comic book reviews. Visit jockandnerd.com. We are your superhero TV, movies, and comic book culture curators.
Boom.
Jockandnerd.com.
Jock and Nerd!
Hey, my name's Paul, and I'm not an animal expert.
I'm Donna, and I'm not an animal expert either.
And together we do a podcast about animals called Varmints.
Every week we pick an animal, do a bunch of research on it, and bring you some interesting facts about that animal.
But we don't stop there. We talk about that animal in movies, TV, and other pop culture.
And we talk about whether or not that animal would make a tasty dish, and how intelligent we think it is on the scale of 1 to 10.
It's exactly like one of those fancy PBS nature documentaries.
Except with more poo jokes.
New episodes go live every Thursday wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Or you can visit us at blazingcariboustudios.com.
Varmints! Varmints!
And we are back, listeners. And let's just start with a really awesome news clip that came out this week. It's a theater news clip. We don't often have those, so that's why I kind of wanted to start with it. Harry Potter and the Cursed Child is heading to Broadway, and this week we found out that we have finally got a cast for the show, and also when they're going to be putting the tickets on sale and what you have to do to get those tickets.
Now, wasn't there something in the news where she had, we talked about it on the podcast, there was all this buzz because she had this dress that she had written a transcript on?
Oh, yeah. We had talked about a story a few weeks ago. J.K. Rowling had wrote some sort of, like, start of a novel on a dress, and it's sitting in her closet somewhere, and then she wore it to a party, and it wasn't a Harry Potter novel. That was never confirmed.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
She wrote it on the dress?
She can't afford paper, Steve.
Times are tough.
Poor woman.
She wrote it out. She went to a Halloween party dressed as a manuscript. Unfinished manuscript. So she had written out this piece of novel that
That's funny.
Was new, that no one had ever seen before, and people were losing their mind that there was this unfinished manuscript somewhere in her closet.
So, going back to the actual news clip, we...
More importantly, I got the word buzz in, but that's okay.
Oh,
go on.
Oh, dang it. Where is it in the... What number? What minute is this? Wow. I gotta write this down. I always forget. Nice job, Patrick. Touche. 32. 51. All for that. Confound it. Anyway, 7 members of the original West End cast are going to be joining the Broadway cast. A lot of them were nominated for Olivier Awards, and some of them won.
Really?
So this could be a pretty big contender in the 2018 Broadway Tony Awards. The show is actually, the story is from Rowling, but it was written by Jack Thorne and John Tiffany, who is the director. So it's not truly written by Rowling, but it was her idea.
Okay.
So the actors coming from the West End are Jamie Parker, who is Harry Potter, Noma Dumezwini, I probably murdered that one, as Hermione, and Paul Thornley as Ron Weasley, and then there are 4 other members as well. Yeah.
Do you know any of the music from this show?
It is a play.
Oh, it's a play?
It's a play, so there's probably incidental music. Okay. Did you want me to hum a little bit?
I wanted you to sing some of the lyrics of the opening number, so I wanted you to sing.
This novel is still a cash cow. Now playing on Broadway.
Yep, that works.
No, I'm not going to do any more of those.
That was too good. That was
it just
too
repeats
good.
Over and over again.
That's all it is. It's like 3 hours
It's like a
later.
Chant. Yeah, yeah. It calls all the Rollingites to New York to come see the show.
That's right. Spend your
but,
money.
But this is interesting. So instead of just going on Ticketmaster on, I think it's like October 22nd, you actually have to do a registration process prior to this date. And the registration process is only 3 days long. So you have to register on Ticketmaster to be able to buy tickets when they go on sale.
Wow.
Because I'm going to assume after the whole Hamilton debacle, when bots would go on and buy thousands of tickets and resell them, they're trying to fight that because this is going to be bigger than Hamilton.
Ooh, I doubt it.
I'm not saying
doubt it.
Better.
Doubt it.
I'm not saying better, but I am saying bigger.
Doubt it.
I don't know. We've had friends that have seen this in London, and I have a friend who is a theater. He goes to theater all the time on Broadway. He works in the industry. He said this is one of the best things he's ever seen, ever. He's not someone that is amused by just about anything. He's a very tough critic. So I do predict it may be bigger because think about Hamilton when it came to Broadway was just Hamilton. This is the books. This is the movies.
Yeah, but the problem with that, and we've talked about this before, the problem that I have with that is when you have something that people have expectations about, it's really hard to live up for everybody to meet those expectations. When you have a show like Hamilton, people are walking in the door without a single expectation. Now they are. Now people are walking into Hamilton with expectations. But when it first came out, there were no expectations. It blew the doors off of the theater because people walked in without expectation and were blown away by it.
True.
When you say, I'm going to go see Harry Potter the musical or the play or whatever it is, I'm going to have expectations about how each of the characters are going to sound, how they're going to look, what their accents are going to be like, and how the story is going to unfold, and how each of the characters is going to behave. And if that does not meet my expectation, I'm going to be disappointed.
It's a very valid point.
No, I feel that way between the two. Like, when Producers was re-released, we got to see it. One of my teachers at Aspen was in the percussion section. He got to play up in the 6th floor and like in the harp room where it's harp and extra percussion. So I got to tour the stage and hang out, and that show was awesome. And people knew what it was, but it lived up to the hype and was good. But then, 2 years later, Young Frankenstein came out?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it was just sort of,
Yeah.
And it couldn't pass its own muster because everyone's going to see it because you expect it to be Young Frankenstein.
Right.
And I feel like you just spend 2.5 hours waiting for them to get to all the jokes.
Yeah.
And I saw Young Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. I thought it was delightful, but people were kind of like saying, this isn't as good as the Producers.
Which, I mean, it's a hard bar to compare
it to. It's hard. I thought it was delightful. Right. People in the audience were saying the jokes right along with
and
the actors.
I mean, that's the good thing with a Mel Brooks film is you've heard the jokes 700 times and you still laugh at them.
Yep.
But you're right. It wasn't, I enjoyed it. I saw it on Broadway. It was fun, but it wasn't as entertaining, I thought. But it's true. I mean, when you have such source material that everybody has access to versus something that's fresh.
Yeah.
That's true.
Well, mark my words, I do think that the tickets will swell to more expensive than Hamilton.
Yeah, okay.
I do. I really, truly do.
Words have been marked.
And this is also a book that people weren't fond of, myself included. I wasn't completely taken with it.
Yeah.
It didn't have the same magic as the original set of books. And it's going to be a hard sell for me as well, because I'm a diehard fan. So, moving on to the realm of Game of Thrones, we got a pretty kick-ass episode this past week, and reminder that we are on a little bit of a time delay, so we're talking about episode 3, The Queen's Justice.
Yeah.
And Steve is a fan of Game of Thrones.
Definitely.
What did you think of episode 3?
It was good. I mean, at this point, you can tell they only have, what, 7 episodes to play with. So we're actually advancing plot. I loved when the guys went up to take Casterly Rock. They were just there and it was done. I feel like in earlier seasons that could have taken 6 episodes for them to get on a boat and a plane and a dragon and finally get there. So I love that things are really aggressively finally moving along.
Don't you ever, whenever you hear Casterly Rock, don't you ever imagine like a rock concert happening on top? Casterly Rock!
Just lights flashing
just
everywhere.
Just tearing with a, just shredding it up with a guitar. And fireworks, yeah, that's what I always picture. I was listening to a podcast actually today and they were saying how disappointed they were with the introduction of Casterly Rock. It's been built up all these many seasons. And it was just sort of a castle, like a random castle.
No, just kind of like, oh, we're there, we're done, we took it, and no one's here.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of, I agree, and I feel like that's the other thing you maybe have, is sort of the casualty of having to explain things quickly, is you can't give something the grandeur that it needs sometimes. You just have to blow through everything to kind of get your plot across.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it's true. It was nice to see, I mean, there were a lot of good, like, moments, like, between the queen at the end saying that, like, drinks the poison as quick as you can, like, I killed your kid. And then earlier too, with when Cersei kissed one of the snakes, the snake's daughter on the lips, and you're like, oh
shit,
that's not good.
It actually, when she drank the wine, not that she did it in the same way, but it reminded me of how Cersei was pouring herself a glass of wine as she watched the Sept of Baelor get decimated. And they use wine so many times in the series.
They definitely do.
They should, and there are labels of wine out there dedicated to Game of Thrones.
That's funny.
But oh man, that image of Olenna at the end is going to live in my memory for a long time.
That was good. I keep, like, you hope that at some point, like, that when she's saying the things to Jaime, like, you know she's crazy. You just hope that he's thinking those same things. Like, he's like, no, she really is nuts. And you hope at some point he turns good. And I'm dying to see, like, what is the moment that finally makes him go to the other team.
There are a lot of theories out there that, according to prophecy, that Jaime will kill Cersei.
Right.
And something that I read that gave me hope was the person online was saying, Jaime is not sadistic.
Right.
He's never done anything that's sadistic. Cersei's the queen of sadism, basically. Right. And if that gives you any hope to see that he might have a change of heart, that fact does.
Yeah, I think it's going to be, there's going to be a good fist pump moment. I hope it's this year.
It's not from Jaime because he doesn't have one.
Too soon.
Man. There's a buzzkill on that joke.
Sorry.
Write that number down.
Oh, dang it. Yes. I mean, yay. I'm glad that you got it. I helped a little bit.
Yes.
I get extra credit for that one. Actually, one of the best tweets responding to the episode. Have you seen the Arthur meme? Of Arthur's fist clenched.
Yes. Yeah.
Someone put that, but photoshopped out the hand clenched.
I did that.
And the caption is, when Lady Olenna told Jaime that she killed his son. And there's obviously the fist clench is supposed to be there, but it's not.
Not.
Jaime. I tell you, Twitter is awesome after an episode airs because there's so many funny people on Twitter.
Yeah.
And I just love reading all the comments.
So in my introduction to Jaime Lannister, there's a movie with Jennifer Aniston and maybe someone else where he plays like a manipulative husband that has a couple other girlfriends and they bust him. And I think it's Jennifer Aniston, but it's if you search whatever movie's here in. But he plays like sort of the douchebag, sleazy boyfriend that has like the stupid haircut and he's the guy that gets left in the end of the movie. That, like, I literally saw that like the Saturday night before my first Game of Thrones episode and you're like, oh wait, what? This guy's in this movie in Game of Thrones? So we'll see if we can find that movie title. But
the number of people that have crossed over. I mean, we have Jim Broadbent from Harry Potter and Moulin Rouge and, of course, other things too. But then this week we had Mycroft from Sherlock.
Yes. How cool is that?
It's been a couple years. Like, we haven't seen him since, what, season 3 or 4? Because he's always been that banker, but he hasn't shown up.
Oh, I totally forgot that.
Yeah, it was because when he showed up about in season 4, you're like, why do I know that face? And you're like, oh my God, it's Mycroft from Sherlock. Exactly. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
That took a couple minutes.
Mm.
For what?
To figure out where he was from.
No, I was pretty quick. I couldn't place his name. It's Mark Gatiss.
But it's more like you recognize the face. And when I first was watching Game of Thrones, I was deep into probably one of the seasons of Sherlock, too.
So. Oh, such good shows. Both really well crafted shows, and my TV viewing will have a huge, gigantic void in it when Game of Thrones is gone. But it won't be gone until 2019 because they're taking a gap year.
Oh, they are.
In between.
They're taking a gap year.
I thought about it.
The Other Woman.
That's it, The Other Woman.
That's the movie.
Okay.
Jennifer Aniston. That's what I've been doing here.
Oh, welcome back. Thank you. I'm so glad you could join us. I part of your day.
Did you know Jamie Lannister's real name?
Nicholas Coster-Waldau.
That's a crazy name.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
It's very, I'm thinking Polish.
That's
do you
want to
fact
nice.
Check me?
No, I don't want to fact check
well,
you.
Well, then don't poo-poo right, me. Fine. I'm riding a good buzz here. Don't kill it.
Oh, I was just going to work it in. Man.
Slip it in, get it in. Well, Patrick, while you're fact-checking that, actually, could you fact-check that out of the room, please? I'm going to actually ask you to leave the room for a little
Why?
Bit. Because this is all a part of our next segment.
I am intrigued.
If
you would be so kind, I'm going to invite you back. Don't worry.
How far do I have to go?
I'm not changing the locks.
All right, tell you what. I'm going to go play Fallout 4.
Okay. And but you need to not listen to our conversation.
Oh, that's easy. That's okay. Easy.
Yeah, so check. Just take the laptop upstairs.
No, I'm not. What?
You are going to listen to our conversation. You can't listen. This
I
is
to
very
go
important.
Upstairs?
Yes.
I had a procedure done today.
You did, and I'm just asking
I'm tired.
You to walk. Yes. The doctor didn't say that you couldn't walk, though.
He's Danish.
The doctor?
The doctor? Yeah, exactly.
Good to know.
No, Nicholas Coster-Waldau is Danish.
So Poland and Denmark, two opposite places.
I'm taking the headphones off and I'm walking away.
Good.
Walking
I will,
away.
And I will call you back. I'll beckon
away
you
now.
When we're ready for you.
No, I know what I'm not wanting.
Goodbye. Eric, you're on watch.
Oh, wait a minute.
Steve, I've asked you... I think he fell. I've asked you here today
yes.
to talk to our listeners about the Dark Tower. Patrick knows nothing
okay.
about the Dark Tower. And in a few minutes, we're going to invite him back. And we're going to ask him some questions about the Dark Tower.
Okay.
Because he literally knows nothing. And he's very delightful when he knows nothing. So
got it.
Before he comes down, we just want to confirm some facts about this movie and this book series.
Okay.
So tell us what you know first.
So what the... Am I allowed to give spoilers within the context of the books?
We will do a spoiler alert. So fans, if you have not read the books or seen the movie, here's your official spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert!
All right, so within the context of the books, the first book, The Gunslinger, starts with Roland, our gunslinger, on a desert and sort of begins with the man in black fled across the desert and the gunslinger followed. That's where the Dark Tower starts. 8 books later, long story short...
And to make a long story short...
Too late!
Roland finally gets and finds the Dark Tower. He basically saves the day, gets to the Dark Tower. But in a course of this journey, there's a special horn that Roland was supposed to bring with him. It's the Horn of Eld. And he's supposed to bring that horn with him, and he's supposed to blow the horn when he gets to the Dark Tower. And he loses it in the course of his hundreds, thousands of year journey. But he climbs up the Dark Tower, and when he finally arrives at the Dark Tower, Stephen King writes his own spoiler alert as an aside in the 7th book, which is called The Dark Tower.
Okay.
And in the book, Stephen King's like, Roland made it to the Dark Tower. You can stop reading now if you want. Or you can keep reading to learn what really happens. So he gives you your own warning, to basically saying, like, you're probably not going to like what happens next.
That is, so, it's very meta.
It's really cool. So you read on, and Roland climbs the tower, and at a certain point, Roland walks out a door in the top of the Dark Tower, opens a door, and he's back on the desert, chasing the man in black in book one. So it's like a continuous loop.
Crazy nuts.
So after 7 books like that, he walks out of the Dark Tower and you're back at book one again.
So are you supposed to believe that he is forever fated to be chasing the men in black?
So that's what the movie is supposed to be able to do, is the movie is viewed as a sequel to the books, not an adaptation of the book. Because there was a tweet that Stephen King put out when the movie was in production where it's a picture of Roland and he actually has the horn. And the tweet says, one more time around.
Oh.
So they're viewing the movie as this is Roland's final trip. That when he comes out of the Dark Tower,
okay.
he kept the horn. They don't explain why this time around he managed to keep the horn. But they're explaining that the movie is sort of the culmination of the books. That it's going to represent the fact that he now is on his final journey.
I appreciate that. Has this ever been made into a movie before?
No, it's the first time. They've been trying to make it for a while. They had J.J. Abrams signed on to be director right before he got Star Wars. And apparently J.J. Abrams was a huge fan of Stephen King and of The Dark Tower. And he sort of didn't want to be the guy to screw it up.
Yeah.
So he backed out and then ironically got Star Wars right after it.
Crazy. That poor guy.
Yeah, exactly. But that's why it's, and that's sort of why they're playing on the fact that if you look at the first movie, it includes characters from books 1, 2, 5, and 7, basically. And it's because it's not a direct adaptation of the book, The Gunslinger. It's more a continuation of the books themselves.
Okay. I have a few more questions, just for clarification.
Got it.
What is Midworld?
It's sort of it's Roland's version of our world, so it's where he's from.
Okay.
So it's basically the Dark Tower is the center of the universe. There are beams that go out, and one of the main lines you get from the Dark Tower is there are more worlds than these.
Okay, and is this true that Roland lost some fingers?
He did. So at the beginning of book two, so at the end of book one, Roland finally catches up to the Man in Black. They have a palaver or a discussion, and Roland falls asleep on a beach for 100 years. Wakes up 100 years later, the beginning of book two, which is the drawing of the three. And as Roland is waking up from his sleep, there are these lobstrosities that come up the beach. And like huge, like monster-sized lobsters and crabs. And actually take off. It's either two or three of the fingers. It's three fingers on his main right hand.
Okay, so three more quick questions.
Yep.
Who is Jake Chambers?
So Jake Chambers is sort of the young kid that ties everything together. Jake Roland meets Jake outside of a refilling pump station in Midworld in the beginning of the Gunslinger book. And Jake had just sort of come through a portal to be there. And sometimes in our world, death can be the portal in how you get to a different universe.
Okay, so just to clarify, who is the Men in Black?
Men in Black
not Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones.
Exactly. So the Man in Black is sort of the overarching bad guy figure from within most of Stephen King's books. I mean, the Man in Black as a concept can turn into Randall Flagg from Eyes of the Dragon, Richard Flynn from The Stand. A lot of the bad guys, he ends up being sort of that connective bad guy tissue. In the Dark Tower, he sort of takes on the role of Walter and Martin. And it kind of turns out that they're almost one in the same person. There are tons of wiki pages devoted to, is Walter the Man in Black? Is the Man in Black also Martin? Those are kind of the two main bad guys.
And then I think just to kind of clarify, Crimson King?
Is sort of like the ultimate bad guy that the Man in Black works for.
Okay, so it's boss.
So boss, exactly. So the Crimson King wants to destroy the Dark Tower, and the Man in Black is sort of the way that he does it.
How do you actually destroy the Dark Tower?
There are beams that sort of connect the tower. This is like trivia time.
Yeah.
So that there are like, oh, I forget how many beams there are, but the beams are named after animals. So you have the beam of the turtle, beam of the bear, and you destroy these beams, and the beams are destroyed by people that are called breakers. There are sort of people with psychic special abilities that can be used to focus to destroy these beams. Jake is one of those breakers.
You've given us a very thorough introduction to this movie. So now I'm going to actually call back Patrick, and we're going to ask him some questions about this franchise.
Should go well.
Patrick, thank you for rejoining us.
Yeah.
I have some questions for you.
I was young. I needed the money.
Not in this episode. Not in time.
Okay.
Or that's a different version of the Dark Tower.
Yes. So actually, Steve has a great segue. I just sat here talking to Steve about Dark Tower.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know a lot about it.
I know as much as you know.
Pretty much. That's why I told Steve.
Yeah.
We'd like to ask you some questions about the Dark Tower.
I had a procedure done today.
That's exactly why we're going to ask you these questions now. So when you're ready, just give me a wave and I'll ask you our questions about the Dark Tower.
I'm not going to be ready in any time.
That's why ask me now.
Okay.
I think that was the wave.
So Patrick, the main character of the Dark Tower is Roland.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about Roland.
Roland is a 12-year-old African-American child who's been adopted by a white family.
Okay.
And he causes all kinds of hijinks. And he's got an older brother and a white sister who actually goes into porn later.
Oh.
Yeah.
Steve did not mention that.
It's pretty spot on. Yeah. I forgot that one part.
You forgot that. It's exactly. A little bit of like a way more into his biography. We just did a cursory.
Oh, okay. That one, so yeah. I went too deep.
Thank you for telling us that.
I went too deep.
That was the prequel.
Exactly. Okay. Right. So, the origin story.
So if Roland is a small black child living with a white family,
yes.
Who is the man in black?
Well, the man in black is actually very similar to what the man in the yellow hat was to Curious George. The man in black would be the person that takes care of Roland, feeds him, clothes him, changes his diapers when need to be.
But isn't Roland a young boy? Is he still in diapers?
Roland's got some issues.
Oh, okay.
He was
okay.
A leap year baby. Doesn't want to talk about it.
Exactly. Dang, man.
He's still young in heart.
Apparently, Roland has a special item that he loses along the way in the Dark Tower, but then finds again. What is this item?
Oh, it's a map. And it's a map. Very problematic.
Why?
Well, because the map shows him where he's going, and he loses it.
And that's it?
It's a big problem. He needs his map.
How does he find
and
the map?
And his magic binky, which is a whole different thing altogether.
Matt, what are the magic binky's powers?
The magic binky's powers light the way and give him the mind of a 40-year-old.
Oh.
So when he sucks on the binky, he becomes a very intelligent man, which is a very huge conundrum, because when you suck on it, you become a very intelligent man, but you look like a child.
It's almost
an age-old problem.
To throw off his enemies.
Correct. Suck, suck, suck. Ah, nope, nope, baby. But he's suck, suck, suck. Ah, nope, nope, baby, no.
I like how you're giving him the voice of a 40-year-old. He's not a child.
Suck, suck, suck.
Tell me specifically, where does Roland live?
Oh.
What's the name of it?
Well, the whole Faulty Towers. No, what'd you call it? Dark Towers.
Dark Towers, yeah.
Sorry. Dark Towers takes place in a neighboring city to Metropolis and the other
Gotham?
One.
Gotham. Yeah, I was going to help you.
The sister city, which is kind of, it's in the center.
What's it called?
It's called Lost Towerland.
Oh, ooh. That's pretty to the point.
It's kind of exactly. It's kind of on the nose.
Yeah, so the Lost Tower is referring to the city.
Yes, yeah. No one can find it because, of course, Batman and Robin have destroyed the cities completely and all the debris is on top. Which is why he lost his map and his magic binky.
How was the Dark Tower created?
Well...
You said that it was named. The city was named for it. So was the Dark Tower in existence in before
heyday,
the city?
In its heyday.
Yes.
It was quite a place to be. It was the largest tower that blocked the sun for miles, which is why it was called the Dark Tower.
Okay. Again, to the point.
And then Superman and Batman destroyed it, and it was become rubble.
Okay, apart from...
I think I'm dead on, by the way.
I'm totally. Not saying
I'm feeling
not.
Good
I'm
about this.
I'm just getting more... I don't know anything about the film.
I feel good about this right now. Go on.
Roland, aside from his map,
yes,
and aside from his binky,
yeah,
he loses something along the way. What does he lose?
Well, all right. Part of the tricks of having the binky that turns you into 40-year-old is that you are women are attracted to you. So he loses his virginity on this path. And it's really disturbing to see.
Man, did you read the books when you went upstairs?
Did you read Cliff Notes?
Suck, suck, suck. I liked it. Ooh, nope, baby.
Nope, baby.
So as he starts stop sucking, he turns right back into a baby.
Is this like a big thing? Like one scene, he's Tom Hanks. The next scene, he's a little kid
when
again.
He's sucking on the binky, he's a 40-year-old man. It's very confusing.
Does he go to F.A.O. Schwartz and play Heart and Soul on the
That's
piano?
That's just silly, Kate. No.
Why would anything like that happen?
No.
Okay, getting a little deeper.
Oh, please. I think we're too deep.
getting a little into this universe.
All right.
What role does the Crimson King play?
Okay. The Crimson... This is obvious.
I figured. I just want to clarify.
The Crimson King is... did you ever see...
Crimson Tide?
No.
Yes,
no,
I have.
No. Wreck-It Ralph?
Yes, I have.
Yeah. It's just like him, except he's wearing all red. The King Candy.
Oh, King Candy. Are they related?
Yeah. Well, no. He's the Crimson King. It's totally different.
But they could be brothers.
Come on, Kate. It's totally different.
Totally different. No, he was actually the ruler of the Dark Tower. He was on the top of the Dark Tower, and he wore red. And he was the one that screamed to Batman and Robin, "Don't knock down my tower!"
In a Mary Poppins voice, he said.
That's right.
I'm Mary Poppins, y'all.
That's right, Mary Poppins, y'all.
I really thought for a minute, and this is my fault. I don't know anything about the Crimson King. I thought he was just Sean Connery.
No. I think everyone was expecting it to be Sean Connery.
I think all of our listeners were like, it's got to be Sean Connery.
It's got to be Sean Connery. No, it was just like King Candy.
And how would Sean Connery say the Crimson King?
He would say, not my time. I can't do it. He would say, Batman Robin, not my tower.
Do you have a binky that when you put it in, you're Sean Connery? Ooh. And when you don't, you're back to...
I would
to...
take that. That would be fun.
This is Sean Connery.
Shock it, Trebek.
Well, okay. I'll just jump to the end.
Oh, okay. There's more?
There are a lot. There's a lot
more. I
was
hoping there wasn't more. All right.
Apparently, you have to destroy the dark tower.
Whoa.
How do you destroy it?
You call Batman and Robin and tell them to fight crime. I think that's pretty clear.
But there's something specifically that you need to destroy it. You can't just knock it down. It's a little tougher than...
It needs love.
Love will destroy
it. Love will destroy the tower.
I don't mean to correct you.
But please
do. It's not love.
Okay, let me try again.
It's actually... there's six beams that...
Oh, so it's like the World Trade Center.
Oh, my...
Oh, too soon? Too soon? It's too soon.
There are six beams... A part of the Dark Tower. We've just lost half of our listenership.
We work so hard.
No, Patrick, there are six beams that need to be destroyed to destroy this Dark Tower. But specifically, there is a beam called the Beam of the Turtle. What?
Okay, are we making this up now?
I'm not making this up.
All right.
What does this beam do?
The Beam of the Turtle.
The Turtle.
Which would imply that it has the hard outer shell, but the inside of the beam is very soft.
Okay.
And when it gets scared, it curls up.
So its superpower is hiding.
It hides.
It just hides.
But because of the top of it is very hard, it was able to hold quite a lot of weight.
The World Trade Center is in fact. Patrick, thank you for answering all of
That's
our questions.
That's it?
Yeah, I just want to make sure listeners knew about the movie.
See, now I was torn between the turtle being that way or the fact that it loses to the rabbit. I wasn't sure exactly which
way to
go.
I don't believe
that.
There's a beam of the rabbit, is there, Steve?
There could be. I don't remember all of them on the top of my head.
There's a lot of beams.
There's a lot of beams? They have names?
Yeah. There's at least 6 to 8 of them.
There's one more news clip I think it's just fun to talk about. And last week we talked a little bit about the fact that Justice League is going through some reshoots. And out came this ridiculous story about how Henry Cavill, who is playing Superman... is they're going to have to digitally remove his mustache that he supposedly had for Mission Impossible 6.
Oh, so he's evil Superman.
He's emo Superman.
Exactly.
He's nega Superman.
He was already emo Superman. And I love these movies.
Oh, I said
and
evil.
He was still... Emo works too.
Emo works too.
Emo. So he came out on social media. Not
Superman's gay? Why?
He is super.
With a fabulous stash. To prove it. No, he logged on to social media and said the following. Dear followers, and obviously picture and vision here, Henry Cavill.
Can you do his voice?
I cannot.
Okay.
I don't claim that as a talent. Okay, all right. Dear followers, it is time to finally set the record straight in this mustache fiasco. Pictured above is not a set on Mission Impossible 6, but is in fact the latest in a series of weapons being designed by Warner Brothers and Paramount Studios to combat the entity known as Henry Cavill's mustache. There has been no discussion over whether to shave or not to shave for the Justice League reshoots, simply a relentless campaign to put an end to the seemingly inexorable conquest of this despotic stash. It is not a question of if I should shave, it is a question of how can we possibly be victorious against such a beast without bringing our own doom raining down upon us.
Okay, that clearly was not on Twitter. Because it was not 140 characters.
I believe it might have been like an Instagram or Facebook. Right. I think it was Facebook.
Okay, all right.
He had some lovely hashtags. Henry Cavill's mustache, hope is all we have left, and mustache impossible.
Nice.
So that was very humorous.
Nice.
To end this lovely episode with Steve Weiser from the Erie Philharmonic.
Well, before we do, I have my segment. What we learned on the podcast.
In our second week of a brand new segment.
Which is skeleton because I had to miss a chunk of it.
I'm sorry.
Patrick had a brain tumor.
It's okay. Oh.
Steve Weiser plays Skyrim and loves Lucky Charms. Kate wrote lyrics to Harry Potter. And I was kicked out.
This novel is still a cash cow.
That's funny.
So
buy up your seats right now.
So, Steve, tell us again who you are, what you do, and where we can find you.
So, I am the executive director of the Erie Philharmonic, where we're a small, awesome staff of five looking for a sixth member, hopefully by the next time we talk, we'll have another person working with us.
Fantastic.
We have a fun season coming up, 10 concerts. You can learn all about it at eriephil.org, our Facebook page, and we're looking forward to a good year, and it's always a good time to be here with you guys. This is always a blast. I let my inner nerd come out.
Excellent.
And have a good time.
I apologize to everybody if they really thought that what I thought happened in that movie actually happened, and they go to the movie and they're disappointed. I'm very sorry.
I think there's going to be a lot of disappointment surrounding this movie, but we'll see what happens.
Steve did mention while you were gone that it's not gotten good reviews.
That's too bad. That is too bad.
Your premise actually sounds more entertaining.
That's pretty true. If you're going to do a movie, you either want it to be laughably bad or really good. You don't want to land in that meh category.
Oh, yeah. No, that's dangerous. Now, before you do wrap up, I do have a question for both of you.
Yes.
Did you get my reference between the black child with white parents and a sister who went into porn? Do you know what I'm talking about? Oh, my God. Seriously? Oh, Dave Mitchell. Dave Mitchell, help me out here.
Is it?
Give us a hint. Give us a chance to redeem
ourselves. It's a television show back in the 80s.
Oh.
The premise was...
Was I alive in the 80s?
Was it...
You old people. I hate you people. I hate you both.
W. Start the W, right?
No.
No? Webster?
No, that was a different
Family
show
ties?
Altogether.
Here we go.
Oh, come on. Different Strokes. Okay, all right. Somebody out there is like losing it right now. Okay, Different Strokes. Oh, all right,
I was like Sesame Street.
I was alive in the 80s.
Pete.
David the Gnome.
No, it was Different Strokes.
Eureka's Castle.
And the two African American children were adopted.
DuckTales.
Nope. Two African Americans were
Darkwing Duck.
Oh my God.
Tailspin.
And then
Tailspin's the best show ever.
Drummond had this daughter who went on to become a porn star. There it is.
Gummy Bears.
Was that a show or just dinner?
It was both.
Yeah, that sugar high is coming down.
Gummy bears. Do-do-do-do-do-do gummy bears.
Yeah, you play it now behind and see if you're in the right key.
Oh, no, I'm not. I just kind of made that up. No, actually, I did have a CD of the Disney Afternoon at some point, but I'll bring that out next episode. Time for Animaniacs. That's it.
And Rosane.
E to the max.
All right.
Every time it's like polka dot, she's like, no, not right now.
Well, why not?
Wasn't there was one joke about like finger something or fingerprints. Fingerprints, that's what it was. And like one of them went like to the camera like, oh, no. It was very adult.
No, and all the parents are like, what?
What is this?
What are you watching?
Well, aren't they? They're going to reboot Animaniacs.
Yeah.
Really?
Yes. Anyway, this episode has gone longer than we normally go, but it's just full of so much good this week. We want to thank Steve for stopping by, drinking a few beers with us, instructing us, enlightening us on the Dark Tower. We want to thank Patrick for creating possibly a new Saturday morning cartoon series with the Magic Binky.
That's right. And I also want to thank the wonderful staff at down the Shady Side down in Pittsburgh for an awesome, awesome day today.
Yes, thank you so much. We will see you next week for episode 64. Keep tuning in, keep reviewing us on iTunes, and we will see you around. Bye.
Bye.